And good morning, and welcome to Word of Mouth, the program where captivating people talk about their unique jobs. I'm your host, Jim Wunderlich, and today I'll be chatting with Linda and Peter Samarez, co-owners of My Honey Company, located in Richmond, Illinois. Linda and Peter have been beekeepers for over 40 years. And Linda and Peter, thanks so much for being here. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
Now, I got to go ask you real quick, at what point did you know that you wanted to be beekeepers? I mean, you've been doing this for 40 years. What triggered your interest?
Again, as a little kid on the farm, one of my jobs was to get rid of the hornet's nests, and it showed us how to do it at that time, which is illegal today. I think that's funny, but... one day I saw an old man out in the field, and he was taking care of bees, and there was a fascination. But I was asked not to be in the bee business by the family because in 1949, honey was selling for 10 cents a pound.
And wow.
You're not going to make a living. You're going to get married. And so I got to the city and got involved in another profession, and after 20 years of that, I got tired of pleasing people, and there's just a draw to work with bees. Having a bee business is altogether different than being a beekeeper, you know, just enjoying working with the bees.
Well, both of you have said that it's really not a business. It's an art. And I find that kind of interesting. What do you mean by that, an art?
It's an attitude, because if I was worried about a business, and I'm not a businessman, the thing that we have going in Richmond is actually due to my wife, but to enjoy working with the bees, okay, and to work with the bees, you just observe them more so. Some people like horses, some people like computers, you know, they're drawn to it, yet I'm scared of a horse. Well, you get bit by one, and you learn to keep away. Computers, I shake like I don't even know how to turn them on and off. But the fascination of working with bees, and then somehow, just by working with them, all of a sudden you end up with a little crop, and then you sell that, and it just keeps growing, because I started out with actually 2 hives and 6 hives and 12 hives and 25, and then I jumped to 75 hives, and on my own I got up to 500 hives.
Yeah, I want to get back to the hives in just a minute, but the whole idea about the fear thing, I think that's one of the first things that people are thinking. Okay, you're afraid of horses, afraid of computers, but you're not afraid of bees. I'm going to guess most of us in the audience would say, we're afraid of bees. And so how did you develop this so-called attitude? Apparently you don't have the fear of bees, or do you? Do you fear them?
No, because there's more to the story as far as being stung. But... To learn what you're dealing with. And like I said, I have this fear of horses because I don't know how to handle a horse. I'm scared of it.
Mm.
And there's other people who love a horse so much, they'll hug it and kiss it and crawl all over it, and the horse licks them back, and everybody's happy. And the same thing with the computer. Those who know it, it's no problem. So to get to know bees... Again, that's working with them. A lot of the other beekeepers will come around and say, you know, what do you do here? What do you do there? Asking for advice. And I always have to remind them that the books and the information we have, the bees didn't read. Okay, it's to help guide us. And, if you follow actually the book about how to manipulate hives or how to do anything... You have to watch the bees, and actually, if you do that, one way to learn how to work with them is wear less and less protective equipment.
See, that would be the first thing I'd want to do. If I were going to start my first hive, I would go out and buy every kind of gear I have them, I'd probably look like some sort of astronaut by the time I got to the bees. But you're saying take the clothes off. The less you have on, you start to develop this attitude. But, you know, don't they still smell the fear? I mean, I could take those clothes off, but I'm still going to have this incredible fear, I would think. Or is this just something you develop?
It's something that comes out just to stand there, and, of course, you're well protected. But if you're going to work with bees, if you take those gloves off, which are like a suit of armor,
mm-hmm.
you're going to squish bees if you reach in there with those gloves. And if you take your gloves off, you will find you handle the bees differently. You'll put your hand out there, but you won't squeeze. The bees will move for you. Okay?
They'll move for you.
Oh, yes. It's just like going through a crowd of people. If you move slowly, it opens up. But if you run through that crowd, everybody's going to get mad at you. Because you're pushing them aside.
Hmm.
And
well, that's an interesting analogy.
To get the idea of what it's like, basically, not to wear the veil, okay? It's not scary until you see somebody else do it. One of the biggest things is you learn to move differently.
Okay.
You move at a steady, slow pace, and not because vibrations and fast movements set any animal, any human, any insect off. With mm-hmm. that fear, as you mentioned, if I raise my hand up in the air and approach you, you have a little fear of what I'm going to do. And yet, if I lower my hand, we almost want to shake hands, you know. So the way you move has so much to do with it. And it's a matter of getting used to. Many years ago, I gave classes, and one of the beekeepers called me 25 years later and says, "Pete, I don't use gloves anymore." It took him 25 years to gain that confidence. But
and so that is the attitude we're talking about is something that takes a long time to develop.
If you don't have time to spend in a bee yard, get the heck out, okay? If you're in a hurry, forget what you're going to do because, carpenters, when they're careless, they get slivers. Mechanics, mm-hmm. when they're careless, they bump their knuckles. Cooks, when they're careless, they burn their hand. And beekeepers, if you think you're going to have them do what you want, you're going to get stung.
Hmm.
Now, there are mean bees. There are, just like us humans, there's some of us with tempers and some of us who are very nonchalant. So you will find every now and then a hive that's a little bit more rambunctious than the others.
Really?
And those cases, I'll do that hive last and put on some equipment, whatever is needed for that occasion.
How are you able to, I'm just going to stick with this for a minute, how are you able to recognize rambunctious bees versus maybe the more cool, calm, and collected bee colony?
Well, in my case, the easiest is once the lid is off and to take the lid off the top of the hive gently. If I can just wave my hand over the top at a medium speed, if the bees are content, they keep working. And if they're a little irritated, they look up. And if the queen is ailing or there's ants bothering them at night or whatever might be an irritant to them, they'll come after your hand.
Oh, they will.
And then all I do is put the lid back on, and I'll do that hive last. So I don't...
And then put the gloves on?
If needed, yeah.
If needed.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's again, the more protection you wear, the more you abuse the bees. And
then the key, this one last final thing, it sounds like the key to the whole thing is, and back to your crowd metaphor, when you're moving through a crowd, slow motion. Taking mm-hmm. your time, nice and easy, mm-hmm. and then you're not going to get stung.
Mm-hmm. It's just... I love rap music, but just I can't understand it because they talk too fast. If they would just slow down, I'd like to hear their message. But they keep jumping in and jumping around, and
I'm going to go back now to the process of becoming a beekeeper. And you had talked a little bit about the fact that you started off with one hive and the next hive and the next hive. How does that all happen? I mean, how do you get a hive and how do you develop into five hives and 10 hives and so on and so forth?
Well, number one, if it's in you, you enjoy it. And if mm-hmm. it's not in you, within 2 years, you're getting rid of your equipment.
Okay.
But this is a general statement.
Yeah.
Every county in the country has a bee association. Cook DuPage Beekeepers Association, Lake County Beekeepers Association, McHenry County, and in McHenry County, I believe it's called Northern Illinois Beekeepers Association. To go to these meetings, And all you have to do is call the Farm Bureau.
Mm-hmm.
But whether you're, you know, Wisconsin, Indiana, throughout the country.
So I could go to one if I wanted to, if I was interested.
Go there, and you're rubbing shoulders with other people who are at the beginning, and you get to see, and I'm not really familiar with McHenry County, but I know they give classes, mm-hmm. and they give tours, and mm-hmm. the class is so big that they can't meet, they don't meet at the Farm Bureau anymore. They meet at the college.
Jeez.
Just because of the amount of people.
People who want to get into this.
So that's the place to go to rub shoulders and see what it's about.
To get kind of the origin, what you're going to start getting them
right,
into.
Because keeping bees is one thing, and again, either it's in you or it's not in you.
Mm-hmm.
And, to read the book. If it was so easy, there'd be more beekeepers.
Right. The hive. Okay, so let's say I go to this meeting, and I decide that I want to get involved in becoming a beekeeper. How do I go about getting my first hive? And by the way, can I put that hive in my backyard? Is that okay? Is that code?
Every county has got different regulations. At one time, there were two city ordinances against bees in the city of Chicago. Today, they're encouraging putting bees in Chicago. And incidentally, when there were two ordinances against bees in the city of Chicago, I had 30 hives in the city on city property. So that's...
So city property, you were able to have the 30 hives then?
Right.
Okay.
People are scared of bees. However, bees fly in a line. The average comment is make a beeline for it, okay?
Yeah, make a beeline.
Yet, if people realize... What they're bothered mostly are by hornets, which fly in front of you and around you because they're attracted to body scents or hair shampoos or Johnson's baby oil. And they love, hornets and wasps actually are carnivorous. So they come around to your barbecue table. They're the ones that like soda. Honeybees fly to flowers for nectar. And basically in a straight line. In other words, if there's a building in a way, they fly over the building, but always... basically in a straight line. And the only time they become aggressive is to protect their hive. So if you're near the hive and banging on the door or irritating them, they'll come after you. But out in the field, it's just like when we go shopping in the store, everybody smiles at each other and nods. they're looking around. So it's hornets and wasps that have given the bad name. Now, it so happens in Richmond, I had at one time 20 hives in the back of our store to raise comb honey. And now my wife has 4 hives. I have we have an observation hive right in the building.
Yeah, I saw that. That's pretty cool.
And
if you
noticed, we're next to the school. And we're in town. And incidentally, on the other side of town, we have some more hives.
Right.
So bees really don't bother people unless you disturb the nest.
Mm-hmm.
It's the hornets and wasps that create the fear. And
they give honeybees a bad name, so to speak.
They
do.
And again, they
and they're carnivorous. What does that mean exactly?
They're meat eaters.
That's what I thought you meant.
It's actually their basic.
I thought they just like barbecue sauce and Coca-Cola.
No. It's put a ground beef up there.
And young children playing soccer, it seems, in the fall.
Again, it's the sweet drinks. You can make hornet traps out of using soda. I mean, because even I have trouble with hornets sometimes in the fall. That they'll overpower a nest and go inside. And, chomp on my bees because that's protein for them.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
They're not really eating their own kind because wasps and hornets are different than honeybees. Because they're carnivorous, they'll go after these other insects.
Everything except they buzz, and even their stinger is different because they have straight stingers. In other words, they can sting you more than once, where when a honeybee stings you, she's going to die, and the stinger's left in you. So that's,
they pay quite a price.
I've made the statement for many, many years. Nobody's ever challenged it, but... honeybees are the only insect that do not hibernate. Now, your hornets and wasps, the nests all die off. Your bumblebees, the nice big round ones.
Yeah.
Okay, that nest will all die off, and the queens that were produced in basically in September will hibernate. Like in a bumblebee, she has to be like frozen for 4 weeks or 6 weeks so that she can produce again next year.
Mm-hmm.
Where honeybees are alive all year. And that's a big difference.
That's a huge difference. So they have a lifespan, the honeybee does.
Well, in the summertime, it's only 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
And they fall apart.
Okay.
The bees in the winter will live a little longer, but they use up their energy because the queen is maintained basically at 85 degrees throughout winter.
Oh.
No matter what the temperature.
Well, you know what? We can talk about the queen right now if you want to.
I just wanted to say
go ahead.
We're stupid because we heat the building. They don't heat the beehive. They just heat the cluster around the queen.
Oh.
And, of course, generating heat is quite a job. I mean, just like our bodies, if you took your shirt off and go outside, your body shivers to generate heat.
Yes.
So the bees have to vibrate or shiver, which is a physically strenuous.
Mm-hmm.
And they generate the heat to keep the queen at 85. So they work their buns off all winter.
So, a little bit about the queen. We can get into the queen a little bit. And by the way, Linda, I was just going to ask you, do you have the same attitude about bees before we get into the queen as Peter does?
Yes, I like working with them. It quiets me down.
It quiets you down working with the honeybees?
Because like Peter said, you can't be in a hurry.
Okay.
When you go out there, you're there for at least an hour.
Hmm.
You know, I have four hives on the other side of town and, you know, got get over there and get them ready for winter, because winter is coming, and I got to make sure they have enough honey to survive.
So do you both practice biofeedback, maybe? In other words, you say that kind of slows you down when you're with the bees. When you go out there with the bees, do you just kind of all of a sudden start to relax with your breathing, too? I mean, does everything just start to slow down when you're with the bees?
For me, I do, and because I'm concentrating and bringing the frames up and looking, you know, see what's going on in there. Is there a queen? Is the brood, is she laying, you know, a nice pattern, or is there honey? So you're just checking each hive, making sure they're going into winter okay.
Yeah, let's talk about, go ahead, Peter.
I forgot what I was going to say.
About slowing down?
Because if you watch the bees, the one big thing I learned about bees, or from the bees, is to look busy. I mean, if you come to see
look
me...
Look like a bee. Become a bee.
If you come to see me...
Be a bee.
And I look busy, you say, well, leave him alone, he looks busy, okay? I've never seen a bee sweat, okay? So they don't... they just look busy. And... Knowing this, I can take that same attitude as I'm glad I'm here. I'm glad I can share this, you know,
this moment with the bees.
That's it. And
it's kind of a zen thing with you guys, being with the bees.
That's why I attribute to an attitude. If that attitude triggers in you, now if you're interested in sales or interested in deals or interested in medication or interested in research, because I did a couple of projects when the University of Wisconsin had a used to be a federally funded bee lab. I got a kick out of it because they were the scientists and would throw things out, and I would be out in the field playing with them, you know, just helping them for what I did and for what I saw. But bees—they just look busy.
They just look busy, like the bee, a busy bee. You know, let's talk a little bit about the process in the hive, and you started to talk a little bit about when you look inside a hive, and Linda, you were talking about it too. What do you see inside there? These worker bees you had mentioned are just around the queen. Talk a little bit about that. What are they doing exactly? Heating her up? Is that all they're doing?
First of all, the term queen is a little misleading.
Okay.
That bee is an egg-laying machine.
Egg-laying machine.
That's all she is. She does not rule the hive. When they want her to lay eggs, and the reason she's queen is because she was fertilized. Otherwise, all the other workers are females.
Mm.
The drones are strictly for mating, and of course, they're kicked out in the fall because there's no mating in wintertime.
Let's talk about this kind of structure or village. Okay, so they mate, the drone and the worker. The worker
this. You got to get an egg that was laid within 3 days and nourish that egg, and that's positioning the egg in a different position in the hive. And first of all, get out the old queen, and the bees will nourish that egg to be a queen in the future.
Okay, so now we're talking about how a bee becomes a queen.
It's got to be selected.
It's selected?
Yes.
How is that particular bee selected to be the queen?
It's just another egg. Matter of fact, raising queens is another whole little sideshow of beekeeping, and Linda even went to college or took a class on queen rearing. And
talk about that, Linda. The queen rearing. How does that all take place?
Oh, it's kind of interesting, you know. If you have like 10 hives, you know, and this queen is doing really well, mm-hmm. egg pattern's really nice, and you'd like other ones like that.
Yeah, you mentioned egg pattern before. What do you mean by egg pattern?
Well, when all the comb, if it's all solid, it's not spotty.
Oh,
you know.
Okay. You don't want a spotty comb.
No.
Okay.
You want it full.
Okay.
You
okay.
know, and you can get an egg from that hive within 3 days.
Okay.
And you can put it into an egg cap, and you can kind of.
An egg cap.
Well, it's a bar.
See, you're an entomologist. You may have to dumb this down. I'm just a radio host here.
Beekeeping talk, you know.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
So you just, you know, you get a bar, and there's like 8 eggs on there,
mm-hmm.
and you put it into it's called a Nook box. There's only like 4 frames in there,
okay.
and you fill it with worker bees.
Okay.
So what they're going to do is they're going to nourish those queen cells because they have no queen.
There's no queen, just queen cells.
Just the cells.
Okay.
So the worker bees that you put into this Nook box mm-hmm. will nurture these queens until they're born, you know, and you have to make sure that you get them before they start to hatch.
Wow.
Because if one's born, it will go and kill all the other ones.
So there's a small window, it would seem.
In nature, everything is timed, yes.
It's all timed to be able to get that queen bee. Okay.
As the farmers say, you make hay when the sun shines. And if you have to go someplace else or you've got a TV program to watch, change professions quick.
Change professions quick.
See,
okay.
See, we're not beekeepers. The bees
are. No, you're almost raisers.
The bees are keeping us. Okay.
Bees are keeping you.
Yeah, we got to go by their schedule.
You go by their schedule. Okay,
ready.
I'm going to go back to the hive now. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the queen. Let's assume now we've raised a queen. And now what takes place in that hive then? And I'm kind of curious about how there's these worker bees. And I know they're around the queen. But they also have to go out pollinate and, you know, I mean, there's a lot going on here. What's their role?
There's about 7 different phases to a bee's life. This is an average.
Okay.
Nothing's written solid. But when a bee is born, it's just a little bit smaller than normal, and it'll become a house-cleaning bee and clean out the cell. And then it'll basically be a nurse bee, which is taking honey and pollen and their saliva, which is the enzymes, making what we call bee bread or, in some cases, royal jelly.
Hmm.
And they're feeding the bees because bees are fed as needed. They don't mm-hmm. they don't have excess food as larvae.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's wax making, which is a very strenuous job. The last thing they do is foraging out for flowers.
Oh, this is a process. They have to become housekeepers and all this other thing before they can actually be allowed to. I don't know if the word allowed is right, or they're able to go out and. I guess out into the wild.
That's one of the last jobs, and that's why by that time they're falling apart, their wings are tattered. And
jeez.
So, because they only live 4 to 6 weeks, basically, in the summertime.
And so that process takes that long.
You know, we keep saying queen bee. Actually, Socrates called it the king bee because he didn't have an observation hive
mm-hmm.
because he saw the attention she got. But the queen is fed differently and stroked differently. That's why they gather around her, and then she'll lay eggs. And when they don't want an egg, they just ignore her, and she just walks around the place doing nothing.
I tell you,
so,
I...
So there's a personality in a hive that... and each hive is different.
I want to tell you, we've only begun to get into the hive. We haven't even talked about honey yet. We even got into honey, my goodness. And well, there's lots to talk about. And if you're just joining us, oh my goodness, we are learning so much about beekeeping and bees. We have Linda and Peter Samarez, co-owners of My Honey Company of Richmond, Illinois. And they have been beekeepers for over 40 years. And when we come back, we'll talk to Linda and Peter about the critical importance of the honeybee and pollination, the medical uses of honey, and oh my goodness, we have lots more to talk about. Don't go away. That's a fun song. Going back to 1959, that's Jimmie Rodgers with Honeycomb. And Jimmie Rodgers, of course, a country and western artist, and that was one of the first what we call crossover songs that also appeared on the pop charts, too. Honeycomb had a song called Kisses Sweeter Than Wine. Do you remember that song at all, Peter and Linda?
It's in my hard drive, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I was playing that for my wife last night, and she was like, where did you find that? I said, oh, yeah, remember that old song. So, anyway, Honeycomb, and if you're just joining us, you're listening, of course, to Word of Mouth. I'm Jim Wunderlich, and we're talking to Linda and Peter Samarez, co-owners of My Honey Company of Richmond, Illinois, and beekeepers for over 40 years. And, you know, we never even got into honey at all. We were talking about the hive and bees and the queen bee and, oh, my goodness, so much. But one thing I wanted to ask you about is, and we the lifespan of a bee, that's kind of where we had left off, and the different phases a worker bee goes through. We started getting into a little bit of pollination, and we will get into that in just a moment, but we never really talked about how bees produce honey. And so I am curious about that, or maybe that involves the pollination process, but talk a little bit about that. How's that happen?
Everything in nature depends on something else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I always like, you know, I love bananas, and I get bananas, but where they grow and what I'm eating is only made possible by the trains that carry them here. And that's what the bees do. The bees are a very intricate part. The flower, to keep itself going, gives off the pollen and the nectar to attract the bee.
Okay.
And then the bee, just by touching that flower, is moving the seeds over to the next flower, and that's how your fruit is produced. For example, the orchards up here, when we pollinate them, the crop is tripled.
Oh yeah,
when properly pollinated.
Yeah,
that's the only reason you're going to get an orchard gentleman to pay me to move my bees into his yard.
Sure,
because his crop is going to be tripled.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have good, strong bees, if you're a good beekeeper, or well, again, yeah, just a good beekeeper. It's well worth the investment in moving bees into your yard.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the crop is tripled.
Yeah, okay. So, back to the honey real quick, and I do want to get to the we have to talk about, my goodness, what pollination means to the world. The honey itself, then, from the hive, that comes then from naturally, and just back up a little bit. So when do you start to see the honey in the hive?
Well, okay, the bee is taking a droplet of nectar from the flower, and it has basically two stomachs. One stomach to feed their body, and the other stomach, like a cow, to hold that little droplet, and they'll bring it to a hive. Now, basically, the minimum of two, usually three bees will handle that droplet of nectar.
Mm-hmm.
If they have time, they pass it to each other. If they don't have time, they just spit it in a cell, and later on another bee will come over and take it up. And going through the mouth of the bee sounds a little off here, but that is the enzymes that change honey or nectar into honey. That and bringing the moisture content down to 18%. And once that happens, and that's why the bees fan, to bring the moisture content down, once that happens, the bees will put a cap on the on the honeycomb, mm-hmm. that's when it's ripe. If the, if you get enough unripened honey, you'll have a huge case of Montezuma's revenge or diarrhea.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so it's important. You can have a little bit. It doesn't really, mm-hmm. nothing to be afraid of. But now it's those live enzymes in a bee's mouth. It's very similar to our blood.
Okay.
We know everything that's in honey. We know everything that's in blood, but you need it from another human being because mm-hmm. of the live enzymes.
Okay.
And man, you get imitation honey. You get all different, high fructose or whatever with flavoring. But honey has live enzymes, and honey is honey. It's how it's handled, and the biggest element of destruction is heat.
Mm-hmm.
If the honey has been heated, we can go into that, with temperature and.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think what you're saying is this incredibly fine-tuned balance that's always taking place. The honey itself now, okay, so I have a jar of my honey, mm-hmm. and by the way, I guess it's a little bit of a plug, but it tastes better than the store-bought honey. My wife just thinks it's great. Why does it taste better than the store-bought honey? Because I actually thought that tasted pretty good, too, until I had the real thing.
Beside companies changing, new and improved, making recipes, and mm-hmm. now it's... And I attribute this to the packing companies. You can get up almost to 30% fructose and still call it pure.
Oh,
because the standards
okay.
of honey okay. have changed.
Okay, okay.
Again, that's why you not feed children under 1 year, because fructose can mold.
Mm-hmm.
In honey, nothing grows. People have been eating honey for thousands of years, and there has been no botulism. The story that came out about the babies that died in California, this is about 20-some years ago.
Okay.
I followed deeply because I'm in the business.
Sure.
And... 6 babies died. 3 were fed honey 2 weeks prior to their death. And mm-hmm. since then, one mother rescinded her story because she was in a state of shock.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up, in order to add fructose, which can mold, mm-hmm. Do not feed infants. Of course, that's a small part of the industry. So mm-hmm. that's why it was dropped. But pure honey and honey that hasn't been heated. Now, that's a big thing. People say, raw honey. Mm-hmm. We warm our honey up to basically 120 degrees. Now, that's dishwater temperature.
Right, right, okay? Right.
And we don't filter our honey. We mm-hmm. strain it through a lady's stocking because in order to filter it, you have to heat it higher.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these filters that they sell to the market here, 160, 180, well, you've killed the live enzymes.
Mm-hmm.
You still have a natural sweetener, but mm-hmm. you've lost the medicinal history of honey because it's...
And so the reason yours tastes so much better is we don't have all that fruit toast, and it's all completely pure.
Don't do anything to it.
Okay. And that's why if you go to a beekeeper, mm-hmm. what you're going to get is the real thing.
That's us beekeepers have an ego problem, and mine's better than – so if you happen to start your own 2 hives, you'll see yours taste better than mine, okay?
But so that jar of honey that somebody buys, and we'll say from any beekeeper – how much effort went into that? How many bees? And Linda, any idea how that? How much goes into all that?
A honeybee makes a 1/12 of a teaspoon of honey in its entire life.
Oh my gosh! A twelfth of a teaspoon
of honey.
Jeez!
So there's a lot of bees that goes into that 1-pound jar.
Oh my gosh!
That's
what
why
an
I say
effort.
When you put it on your spoon to put it in your tea, make sure you lick it off. don't wash it.
Oh, my gosh. That's wonderful. I'm definitely going to be a little more, a little more careful with that honey. I mean, it's like gold, mm-hmm. liquid gold. Now, bees do more than produce honey. And they're responsible for a number of things. And what are some of the other things that they make besides honey?
Linda's in charge of the candle department, and she makes soap, and she makes ointments with the beeswax. So,
okay. Well, go ahead, Linda. Yeah.
I started making beeswax candles because after you extract the honey, you get all those cappings,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of pile up, and what do you do with them?
Yeah, you were talking about the cappings before.
So you have to render the wax, get all the impurities out of it,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and then you filter it, and it's... to me, again, very relaxing. They have the aroma. It's mm-hmm. like aromatherapy mm-hmm. with the wax.
Yeah, I was there when you were doing some candle yeah. making, and I could see that you were in this incredible calm state when you were doing it. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they produce wax, they produce candles. What else do they the bees come up with besides these three things, including the honey?
A little side thing there is that wax, we have to recommend to people do not eat man-made wax or petroleum-based wax, okay? But to eat beeswax.
Eat beeswax.
Right. It takes 8 to 10 pounds of honey for the bees to make 1 pound of wax. And when you get to my era, my age, you need some good roughage. Now, we a lot of beekeepers produce comb honey, and so do we. To take a spoonful of comb honey and chew it, we call it sweet gum. And if you do want the wax, some people will spit it out, but if you do want the wax, just throw in a cracker or a piece of bread or something, and it sticks to it, and it's wonderful for your 28 feet of intestines. It sort of lubricates it. So now, again, when
instead of having a whole head of lettuce, I can just have a little piece of beeswax,
but again, you have to specify because you don't want a petroleum based product in there or something else.
Yeah, but then bees. I thought I read in the Time magazine that they also make motor oil too.
No.
Okay, what am I thinking of then? Am I way off on that?
Yes, our fall honey. We leave the hives out longer, okay? And the flowers change. The bees are in the same place, but the flowers change to goldenrod, asters, and sumac.
Okay.
So our fall honey is called wildflower.
Okay.
But we call it motor oil because it's so dark.
That's the deal. All right. And
most of our customers for the dark honey are people with accents from Europe. Because they have known this, they call it forest honey.
Okay.
It's the late fall honey, and the flavor's heavier and stronger, but it doesn't have that golden color. Mm-hmm. It looks like motor oil.
It looks like motor oil. Okay. Now, in terms of the medical uses of honey, what are some of the medical uses of honey?
Years ago, I used to give talks, to garden clubs and tea parties or whatever it is, and I could talk for an hour about the medicinal uses of honey.
Yeah, sure.
And only once mention how to take it internally, and that's it's called Vermont folk medicine. It's with raw apple cider vinegar, but all the medicinal external uses of honey, for cuts, wounds.
Can you just put the honey itself on a cut? Is that what you're talking about? Or?
The greatest thing that could happen is if you got two cuts and you put honey on one and unguentine or anything else you want on the other and see what happens.
In other words, you have a control group.
Right.
You put your Bactine or whatever on one and then put your honey on the other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say, a paper cut or something.
That's... She got one this morning.
That's you got a paper cut this morning, Linda.
Yes.
Okay.
You're going to go home and put it in honey.
And you're going to put it in honey. And this would be natural honey from a beekeeper. You put that cut in the honey, and it's going to start feeling better than if you put Bactine on it. I don't think people know this a lot. This is a kind of an epiphany for me.
See, I think it heals faster.
Okay.
Keeps it softer,
moist,
so it heals from the inside out.
Okay.
Now, here's the problem.
Yeah.
The honey in the store is different. It has fructose.
Right.
You want honey from a beekeeper with the live enzymes. Now you have the healing history and the healing power of honey. We had a friend who was burnt severely, and they had to duplicate his skin and everything, and that's how I found out about when they would manufacture skin for a burn patient, they would put it in a saline solution to transport it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now they put it in honey.
But
the honey comes from a beekeeper because that's the only way they can be sure that fructose or something else wasn't added. Just to give you an idea,
sure.
I always, till today, refuse to put U.S. Grade A on my bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Because Grade A is a judgment of clarity, which means you're filtering the hell out of it,
mm-hmm.
and color. What has that got to do with the quality of honey? I don't know. So I've always
interesting.
Been, now, maybe in eggs and poultry and in meat, grade A has
right.
a standard. But
right,
in the honey business,
It doesn't.
And the other
it's
one is
quite contrary.
The other one is organic.
Okay, speak about that, the organic.
If there's any herbicide or pesticide in that flower, who's the first to die but the bee? Because they have a small stomach and they took it straight.
And they took it straight.
And they use bees for this purpose in California to judge overspraying. In other words, they put beehives purposely in fields, and if the bees are dying, they actually do autopsies on bees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because bees have problems too.
Actually, the Time Magazine article that I alluded to before, earlier in the show, says just kind of what you're talking about, that the bees are starting to die because of these pesticides, mm-hmm. I guess. And that's a real problem for people like yourself, beekeepers across the country, and for the rest of us, where pollination is so important for all the things that we eat.
Yeah, this is, again, there's a cog missing in the gears if the bees aren't there to pollinate. Yes, mm-hmm. And there's so many foods and plants.
Now, what are some of the foods? We just talked about the medical uses of honey. Oh, by the way, before I go on to the foods, Russian penicillin, what is that exactly?
The bees have a way of sanitizing their hive.
Okay.
The boxes we build, we nail the boxes together, but we just place them on top of each other. And if you come back the next day, you need a little pry bar to take these boxes apart.
Mm-hmm.
So they glue everything together.
Okay.
And they don't have the social disease like other animals or people do.
Hmm.
And it's this propolis, which is a rosin from leaves.
Propolis.
Propolis. It's Greek for protection of a city or something like that.
Okay.
But that does wonders. And again, people from Europe come over and they...
What does wonders? What kind of wonders does it do?
On open and ulcerated type sores. So the biggest buyer, she makes a healing cream with it. It's just an old recipe.
What do you make, Linda?
It's called a healing cream. It has propolis and it helps with like psoriasis or eczema, any ulcerated sores.
Okay, so this kind of goes back to the honey we were talking about putting on just a paper cut or something like that too. Okay,
it's I talk and my throat goes, and I'm sorry, I still smoke. And if my throat gets raw, I just throw in a chunk of propolis in my mouth and just suck on it for a while. And
that does it. And that does it.
It's worked so far, all the way to my age. So anyway, but it's another product, and it has its value. Again, where is it from and who produced it?
Mm-hmm.
And what's strange about propolis is the story that the Stradivarius violins are coated with propolis because it makes a wonderful varnish.
Mm,
I used to sell propolis to the Greek violin makers in Chicago.
Jeez.
Until one of them sort of got hurt because you used naphtha to dissolve it.
Mm-hmm.
And the naphtha caught on fire and he burned his arm. And so they buy the varnish now out of a can. So
I tell you, the uses of honey, and before the break, we were just, I want to talk about one last thing because we did digress there. We didn't even get to the foods. What are some of the foods that bees are responsible for from the pollination?
Apples, oranges, cherries, pumpkins.
Pumpkins.
Yeah.
Actually, I got a list here. Avocados, watermelon. I mean, it goes on. Cotton, peanuts. I mean, in other words, I guess the quote goes that for every spoonful of food that you put in your mouth, three spoonfuls, one third of those, or one out of three, mm-hmm. is due to the honeybee and pollination.
It's, again, it's just an important thing, like I said, having a train move the bananas is very important to me because I like bananas, and train, there are no bananas.
There are no bananas. And I tell you, we have more to talk about. We have learned so much about bees and pollination and the medical uses of honey. More coming up right after this. We are talking to Peter and Linda Samaras, beekeepers, entomologists for over 40 years. Hang in there. So, you guys recognize any of that music we've been playing at all?
Makes me nervous.
Last song is Al Hurt going crazy on the trumpet. That's the Green Hornet theme, and that, of course, is the Flight of the Bumblebee. Which we found out, the hornet and the bumblebee are very different when we were talking earlier. So they kind of missed the boat there with that title of the song, from what I'm seeing. And then before that, of course, was A Taste of Honey by Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. And we've been talking about all kinds of things in terms of pollination and what that means to all the food we eat, and honey, the medical uses. And I tell you, I have a cut on my foot. When I get home, I'm just going to throw a bunch of honey on it, and I'm going to be as good as gold. I can't wait to do that. If you just joined us, we're talking to Linda and Peter Samaras, beekeepers, entomologists for over 40 years, and owners of My Honey Company in Richmond, Illinois. Before we go, I want to ask you, and I think we're already kind of getting a vibe if people have been listening for off and on during the last hour, but what do you two enjoy most about beekeeping? You talked about some of the things that you enjoy. Is there anything that you would kind of signify is that the thing that you find the most satisfying, the most gratifying thing about or part about the job? And first of all, I guess it isn't a job to you. We kind of established that to begin with. It's an art. We talked about that in the beginning.
Heard many, many times, if you enjoy what you're doing, it's not work.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I was in another profession there for about 20 years and did very good, was rolling along, but something was irritating, and one day I gave it all up to go back to my desire, my love, and that was playing with the bees. And it was kind of hard, because even when you ask us old-timers, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? Mm-hmm. We don't know. But what helped me was I made a list of things I don't want to do. Mm. And I don't want to sit in your chair, and I don't want to have a computer, and I don't want to work indoors. And then making up that list of what I don't like, I said, wow.
Beekeeping.
Beekeeping was it. And that making a list really helped me out a lot, including my marriage with Linda.
Sure.
One day I said,
it's been a team effort.
Well, I said, what's wrong with me? Okay, I'm a nice guy. I get along. And so I made a list of things that I'm looking for, or, you know, and wow, she was working for me anyway, because I needed help bottling. And well, again, she took off with the store, and that's a whole nother world. And now that I have the store, meeting the people who actually use the product, that is, I have more fun joking around. And
There's definitely a give and take there, without a doubt.
And everybody says, yeah, my uncle used to, or my grandpa used to do this.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
Well,
yeah.
Why don't you, okay? Get two hives. No, as a business, that's one thing, but as a hobby, to enjoy the
working
with the bees and not trying to dictate to them. And
and like you said, all you need is a hive to get going, and you can start coming to those meetings that they have, the different counties. So
they're sure. Eye-openers. And then when you get into something specific, yes, you can come to an old-timer, and I'll tell you what I did.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it's going to be right or wrong, mm-hmm. but to see what it's about, and if it's in you, you're on your way. And if it's not, well, then you save yourself a little money. And it's not an expensive, it's not like raising a horse or
right,
a cow.
Right.
It's a hell of a lot cheaper.
Well, one thing that we're going to come back to the bee itself, and either one of you will kind of wind up with this. What have you learned about yourself, or what have bees taught you? Pretty heavy, huh?
Well, again, we had quite a few hives, and mm-hmm. I teamed up with another gentleman up north, and mm-hmm. with 2,000 hives, and that's. But anyway, each hive has its own personality.
Yes,
and just like meeting you is one personality, and
sure.
If I treated you like I do everybody else, it wouldn't work out. So like Linda likes to yell at me, be where your feet are. In other words, stay in the moment and deal with what is and not what I'd like you to be. And
bees do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's they all, in the summertime, there's 50,000 of them living together, and they all get along. I wish we could, too.
Aha. There you go. Well, Peter and Linda Samaras, thank you so much for being on the program today. Thanks again for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, thank you very, very much. But my pleasure. Thank you so much.